the Purpose Driven Entrepreneur Podcast. We're all about delivering great content, thoughtful discussions, and tips and tricks to help you truly get the most out of your life and business. And here's your charismatic host, me, Matt Browning. Hey, welcome to the Purpose Driven Entrepreneur Podcast, episode 3. Dude, Jeremy, we made it.
We did.
We're here. And this is something, if you're listening to this, you know we've been dreaming about this for quite a while. And I've been sitting on this and procrastinating, yet at the same time getting motivated to do it. And we're finally doing it now. So I'm excited that we're here. It's a big time right now, big day. Your Dodgers officially clinched. They are in
the World Series, game two.
It's amazing.
It is.
So I have not seen any news. I do not watch sports. What has happened so far?
Man, it's been 29 years since the last time they've been there. Game two's today.
I live in Orange County. I feel like I should know that. It's been 29 years?
Yeah, 29 years since the Dodgers won a World Series.
That's almost as bad as the Cubs. 1988. Wow.
Yeah. Well, Cubs was like 104.
Well, yeah, almost as bad.
Almost as bad, yeah. But definitely. Yeah, it's been a good time. Good series.
So who won the first game?
Dodgers.
Yeah. Dude, what is it? Only 3 more to go?
Yeah, it's best of 7.
Yeah.
So 3 more to go.
So if they win the next 3, they're done.
Exactly. But they're going to want to bring it back home to L.A. They're not going to win in Houston.
No?
Yeah. I don't think so.
All right.
Got to make it entertaining. Well,
and this is actually a really good point to bring up because we have Dodgers versus Houston. I live in the L.A. area, call it Orange County. And our guest on the podcast this week, we're actually doing our first interview. If you've seen the last previous episodes, it's been me and Jeremy talking, been teaching something. This time we have a really special guest coming in. His name is Mike Bagala. Mike is our head NLP trainer. He's also a Houstonite. He's from Houston, Texas. He's moved out here. And he, unfortunately, is rooting for the Astros.
He is, indeed.
Which I don't think makes a lot of sense.
Doesn't. We were texting all night last night, just like, did you see that? It was super good.
So great.
It's fun.
So I can't wait for you guys to meet Mike, man. I mean, you know him, Jeremy, obviously. He's been working with us for a few years. And Mike is just a phenomenal human being. He's the person, I always say this about Mike, he understands NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and all the work we do probably better than I do, if not at least as good as I do. It's hard to say that without making a big head of myself or him, but the point is I think we're both pretty darn good at what we do. But Mike, man, he is right up there. He is such a good trainer, such a great coach. He's also for years, I'll tell you about Mike a little bit. He's worked for 20 years in businesses, working with individuals to create breakthrough and to make changes. He's been a consultant with companies all over North America, Europe, Asia, Australia, working with FedEx, Allergan, the U.S. Army, Army Reserve, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to work on the communication, efficiency, and effectiveness. Mike's a big deal.
Definitely.
And he's in our family of people and trainers. He is our Evolution head coach. He is our head trainer, and he's going to be a regular recurring guest on the podcast. So look for him every month or so. I'm going to bring Mike back on. And this time it's really fun. I sat down with Mike in the studio. Gosh, this is already a few weeks ago now. But we sat down with Mike, and I realized that with Mike Bagala, if we have lunch together, we said so many times, I should just turn on a recorder when we're talking about this stuff. We're such like big communication, NLP, business nerds. We sit and have lunch and we'll talk for 2 hours and have like the most enjoyable conversation. I think most people in the world would not like this conversation, except all of our people, our whole tribe of people. Like if you've been to one of the seminars or workshops or like you follow what we do here, those are the people who are like, I think we'd have a lot of fun doing it. So I brought Mike on and we're going to have these conversations. This one lasted just under an hour. And I am attempting to keep this podcast under an hour, a little bit shorter than some of the other ones out there. But when Mike was on, I couldn't cut it short. In fact, I think at one point we went off tangent and said that's something we need to do the next time he comes back in. So this time we're going to talk all about frames, how to communicate with yourself and how to communicate with other people. We call it NLP frames. Frames are around how you frame communication. So we talk like in the interview, I ask him, what if I said it's going to rain tomorrow? He says, well, the frame is what makes the meaning out of it. The frame is what makes it matter, right? So if you said, well, the frame is we're in a drought and thank God there's raining. Or if you said the frame is we're going to the beach tomorrow and what a bummer it's raining. So in our lives, the content of the rain in our life isn't what makes us happy or sad. It's not what makes us successful or fail. It's the frames we put around it, the meaning frames. So we'll talk about things like pre-frames, how to frame before you experience something for yourself and for others. We talk about, I think, context frames. We talk about meaning frames, so framing around what things mean, like the rain. We'll talk about contrast frames, which is, you know, every guy has ever done this if they've gone in to try to convince, maybe like I try to convince my wife that we need a 75-inch TV. And before I tell her how much it is, I say, now, honey, I looked at some nice TVs, and some of these TVs get up to about $10,000. And she said, oh, I think that's way too much. I said, I agree, but they're really nice. I did, however, find a really nice one that's really large, but it's only $3,500. And she's like, I know what you're doing. Because she's my wife. So we joke around about that a lot, you know, do it with a pure heart. But giving some contrast really does help. If you just come out of the gate and say, here's what it costs with no contrast, people are going to think whatever they think. So we're going to cover all that and more in the interview. And it's a long interview, so I want to jump right into the meat. Jeremy, you got anything else before we get started?
No, let's get started.
Any special stories about Mike?
No, not at all.
All right, great. I didn't think so. Yeah. All right, without any further ado, Mike Bagala and Frames. Mike Bagala is our head NLP trainer, head coach for Evolution for our company and everything. You're a good friend. I've known you for years now. This is going to be the first podcast that I'm having you on, right?
Yeah.
And the idea awesome. For this, for, you know, if you're a purpose-driven entrepreneur paying attention to this, many of the podcasts, it's going to be me teaching and talking about a subject. And then I will have guests on from time to time that are more interviews to pull out expertise. But Mike, my plan for you, my friend, is to be a recurring guest. I want you to be a recurring character that every month or so I'm going to have you back on. And the idea is we just get to have a conversation.
Yeah.
We're going to, because the thing is, Mike and I, we talk. Just whenever we go out and hang out, or we go out having lunch, or we come in the office, we just start talking about stuff. Mm-hmm. And I love it, because at some point I say something and Mike's like, oh, you know, that's interesting because it makes me think about this. And then before you know it, we're just having this like nerd out NLP personal growth sort of conversation.
Totally.
So the cool thing is the topics of the Purpose-Driven Entrepreneur podcast is really about, we're talking to the entrepreneur who is a lot like us, really, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of person who wants to get the most out of life and business. So we're going to talk about life hacks, talk about business ideas, marketing, speaking skills, communication, leadership, all the stuff that people like us are interested in. So that's kind of the idea. So today,
awesome.
Today's topic, we're going to talk about framing, pre-framing, reframing, this whole idea of framing. So it really comes back to communication. Right.
Yes.
So the way we communicate, one of the most important tools of communication from a neurolinguistic programming perspective is framing in general. So tell us what is framing?
And it's communication both with other people and communication with yourself.
Oh, that's really good.
Right.
Good
and a lot of people don't think of communication as communicating with yourself, but.
What's an example of communicating with yourself?
Okay.
Like, let's pretend some people listening are like NLP masters and some people don't know what it means yet. So kind of like, let's hit an idea, but kind of talk kindergarten level a little bit too. But for those of you who are like super like NLP nerds, you'll get something fun as well, I promise. So break it down first. Like, let's talk about what communication to yourself is versus communication to somebody else. Is it just like the things you say in your head, or like how do you perceive that?
Yeah. Yeah, that certainly is part of it. Okay, so when you think about communicating with yourself, that's probably going to be the first thing that you think of is a conversation that I have with myself. You know, where did I leave my keys? Or, oh, I'm late to this. Or what am I going to do in this situation, right? That's part of communicating with yourself. Also, what's part of communicating with yourself is any thoughts that are going on inside your head. And a lot of people might tend to think of a thought as words, right? But it's more than just that, because a thought could also be a picture inside your head, right? I'm going to come in and see Matt, and we're going to be talking about something. And I might have a picture of the way that I want it to go, or the way that I'm fearful it might go.
You might imagine me without pants on or something.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, that makes sense. Multiple times.
Or nobody would know, because it's a podcast and it's under the desk. So, yeah.
That's true. We actually literally don't have pants on
right
now. No, I'm just kidding.
Makes it more comfortable.
Yeah. So, but that makes sense, right? So you walk into a situation and you can You could say something to yourself like, oh, I hope this goes well.
Right.
Or you could get a picture in your mind of it going well or not going well.
Right.
And so you would call any of those a thought, essentially.
A thought and a way of communicating with yourself.
Wow.
And so if I come in and I think, okay, so I'm going to go in and I'm going to see Matt. Then what if that thought produces a picture and then that produces a feeling, like a sinking feeling, like, ugh. Or what if it produces like, oh, and you know, like maybe a rising feeling inside me, and I interpret that as excitement.
Yep.
Okay, this is all internal communication.
Wow. Okay. So, and obviously from NLP perspective, this makes sense. We call it your internal representation.
Right. Yes.
But you're saying for the purpose of today, the internal representation, which is the pictures we make,
yes.
the words we use,
yes.
The tonality you yes. say the words
That's
in,
right.
the feelings you get with those,
yep.
all of those things we're going to talk about basically as thoughts or communication
yes.
for yourself.
Yes.
And then we bring those internal representations outward and we try to communicate those same things with other people.
Right.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about
right.
the idea of when we do the communication with ourselves or outside.
Yes.
Every communication has a frame put around
yes.
it.
Yes.
So how would you define framing? And just yeah. framing in general so we get the concept of it. And then we'll get more specifically into we'll just talk about pre-framing and why it's so powerful, where you can use it and things like that.
Yeah.
Don't worry. In the open of the podcast, I'll talk all about what we talked about here once we talk about
okay,
it.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. So what is a frame?
What's a frame?
A great question. So we perceive reality and, you know, that comes through our senses, right?
Right.
That's content that we're perceiving. So I'm seeing pictures, I'm hearing your voice, I'm hearing my voice, I'm feeling the chair.
Yep.
Okay. So that is all content, just like if I went in a museum or an art, you know, museum or store or something, and I see that, hey, this picture is a landscape, it looks like that's Africa. Okay, that's content, right?
Okay.
Or this is, you know, a picture of a parent and a child, you know, they're walking
yeah.
through a field or something. So this is this content is what my eyes okay. perceive. So a frame around that, so there's a literal frame,
mm-hmm.
if, say, there's a steel frame around it,
mm-hmm.
then maybe even at a conscious or a subconscious level, I might think, because it has this steel frame around it, that's harsh. And that may not even be a thought, but
sure.
it's an interpretation, it's a feeling that I
sure.
get. Or maybe if it has
the picture begins to communicate
yeah.
somehow in a harsh tone or something.
Yeah, right. Or versus say like it has like a thick, nice wooden frame around it that
mm-hmm.
maybe gives me a feeling of warmth.
Right.
Right? That kind of
Or it has like a jewel frame, a
yeah.
gold frame, and you go, oh, this must be a majestic,
yeah.
Important picture.
It's important or it's classy or whatever it
right.
is, right? And the important thing, so we tend to be very aware of the information, the content that's coming at us.
Right.
But the frame around it can be every bit as important, and it's something that our unconscious picks up and says, hey, here's the way to view this so that here's the way that you're going to make meaning out of this.
Yep.
And frames are so powerful because they tend not to get noticed consciously and questioned consciously.
Wow. So you'd say that people are mostly focusing on the content coming at them,
yeah.
the words that are being said, the
yep.
message, quote-unquote, that's being
yep.
said or communicated, however
yep.
it is, but they're not being aware consciously of the frame around it, so like
yes.
the reference point.
Yes.
I think of frames like that sometimes, too,
because yeah.
obviously we
yeah.
both teach this.
Yeah.
It's like the picture itself, right, the communication are just words floating out somewhere.
Yeah.
But the frame is what anchors it into a reality.
Yep.
And the question is, where is it being anchored?
Right.
What's a reality into?
Yeah. And what do you compare it to?
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
What's the context? What do you compare it to? And that can even be more influential than the content because it doesn't get questioned. Typically.
Right.
Right? So we were just having a conversation.
Say that again. So
yeah.
the frame can actually be more influential than the content of
yes.
communication because
yes.
the frame doesn't get questioned consciously.
That's right.
Dude, that's so good.
Isn't that awesome?
I'm glad I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
This is good, man.
It's
really
good.
Good
stuff to geek out on.
So let's get an example of
okay.
just a straight up frame.
Okay.
Like, let's say I said there's a storm coming in.
Okay.
Or, it, you know, it's probably going to rain.
Okay.
What are some different frames? Like,
Okay, so one frame might be, there's a drought in California, there are fires around, thank God it's going to rain.
Wow.
Okay, that's one frame.
So it's like a frame of, this is a blessing.
This is a blessing.
So I go, hey, yeah. It's going to rain tomorrow.
Yeah.
But the frame around our little words, so the frame can be, could a frame be things you say before you say the thing you say? We'll talk about pre-framing in a minute.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah.
But like, so if we're having a conversation about the drought.
Yeah, play into, right, sure.
And then all of a sudden I go, hey, dude, it's going to rain in a tomorrow. Week.
Now there's a frame around it, and the frame is what's led up to that, right?
Okay, what's another frame for that same content?
Okay, so it's going to rain tomorrow. Oh my gosh, man, we've got plans to go to the beach, and it's going to rain. Oh, this is screwing up the plans, right? So this is an inconvenience maybe.
Wow.
Right?
Or so you could have a blessing frame, an inconvenient frame,
right.
And whatever else you could have.
Right.
So it's
the same content, isn't it?
Right.
Or it could just be interesting. Oh, wow, that's unusual for this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. So, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's
kind of what frames are.
That's what frames are. Yep. Like right before we came in, we were looking through a magazine and we're saying, you know, like look at this. This is like this furniture cube and it's $250.
Right. We were looking at a designer furniture catalog.
Like, designer furniture catalog, right. And so we were saying, okay, that's expensive. And, you know, if you're a purpose-driven entrepreneur, you probably know something about sales. And the classic reframe when somebody says, and this is a frame, when somebody says, that's too expensive.
Right.
You say, the classic is compared to what?
Right.
So what you're doing is you're bringing that content out and saying, how do you view this?
Right.
What frame do you view this at? Because it's that... That you know, to us, in the frame that we were looking at it, and for maybe the purpose we were looking at it, that was expensive.
Sure.
But for some people, if you know you're living in Beverly Hills,
right,
and you want to design a house that's going to impress your neighbors,
right,
$250 might be like, if that's just $250, I want something that's really going to stand out.
Right.
It might be too cheap.
Yeah, and I make like $10 million a year.
Right.
Like that's already like 100 times even a high earner of $100,000 a year. So think about what you would spend on a couch if you make $100,000 a year. Oh, maybe $1,500, something like that. So this couch is $15,000.
Yeah.
So if you're making $1 million a year, $10 million a year, $15,000 can feel like $1,500.
Right.
Or if you're making less, you know, you go buy a Craigslist couch, $150.
Right.
Okay. So you said something interesting though when you talked about reframing, right? The classic sales reframe compared to what?
Yeah.
You said what you're doing is you're actually pulling them out of their existing frame.
Right.
What I found interesting about that is just what you said. The frame is more influential because it's not being consciously communicated. See, I don't walk in to, like Best Buy is my favorite example for that, right? Because, you know, oh, look at this TV. It's so expensive compared to what? But I don't walk in saying, wow, that's expensive. Specifically compared to this TV, that TV, these are the frames I'm looking for with the value-driven price points that I'm considering for my life and how much money I make. I don't tell the person all these things. Right. I just look at it, and I don't even tell myself to your point.
Right. Yeah.
All I do is look and go, $4,000. That's expensive.
Right.
So what you're saying is there's actually a frame already around the term that's expensive.
Yes. And you're not even thinking about
that. And no one's thinking about it.
Yes.
So when you say compared to what, you're actually bringing them out of the frame.
Yes.
That they didn't know.
That's right.
And putting them sometimes in a more appropriate frame, would you say? Or like what happens when you're reframing something?
Well, okay, appropriate.
Just to get it, yeah, right? Compared to what?
Compared to what, right? Yeah, for what purpose?
I guess I had a frame around that too.
Right, yeah. So, and yeah, that's an interesting example. So you go into Best Buy, and maybe you've been looking at TVs. And so this looks expensive compared to what you've been looking at.
Right.
Right? So, and what you probably don't realize in that moment is that you do have a certain frame, and this is internal communication.
Okay.
You can become consciously aware of that frame, and then you can be at choice of what frame is appropriate or not to help you get what you want.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
So as an example, so like with the rain, if I'm not aware of the frame that I'm looking at, then you give me the content of, hey, it's going to rain tomorrow. And say I interpret this as a bad thing.
Sure.
Okay? So if I'm not aware of my frame and I'm not aware of that framing is possible, in other words, that there's a different way that I could possibly look at it, and that's going to create the feelings that I get in my interpretation of this.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not even aware of that concept, then I am at the mercy of the frame that I don't know about and that I don't know that I can control. Right?
Right, okay.
Does that make sense?
I mean, a little bit.
A little bit? Yeah. Okay.
Even I started to lose you for a second, but it was really good.
While it lasted, yeah. Yeah. So if you say it's going to rain tomorrow and I say, that's terrible because I waxed my car just now, or I'm going to the beach tomorrow and I get this. Okay, if that's my frame and I'm stuck in this reality, kind of this reality tunnel of this is a bad thing, then even if you say, hey, you know what, don't feel bad about it.
Yeah.
If that's my frame, it's almost impossible for me to not feel bad about it. Because the reality to me
is, it's a bad thing. How do you not feel bad about a bad thing?
It is a bad thing. Because within this reality, within this the reality of this frame, it is a bad thing.
Right.
And if you say that, it's not that you're trying to, you know, I mean, maybe I perceive that as you're trying to make me feel better, but I would also perceive it as you're wrong. This is a bad thing.
Right.
Whereas if I could say, okay, you know what, I'm feeling bad about this. What is the frame that I'm viewing this from that's causing me to make me feel bad?
Wow.
Now, that question has a frame to it because it presupposes...
But let's not go too far down the rabbit hole.
Okay.
It presupposes
that I can control the frame.
Right.
Yeah.
So something someone could take away right now, though, is if you find yourself in a situation, you're feeling bad about something.
Yeah.
Just the idea of questioning, hey, what frame am I looking at this from?
Yeah.
Am I in a poverty frame, an abundance frame? Am I looking at it? I tell people all the time with like sales objections and clients will come and they'll say, hey, you know, it seems like everybody I run into, everyone says, I really want to do your program, but I don't have the money for it.
Right.
So I always ask them some sort of question that really pulls the frame out of what's your frame around how much you charge?
Yeah.
And what I realize almost every time is someone goes, well, I charge $19.97, it's $2,000 for my program.
Yeah.
How does that feel? You go, well, I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's worth it because I'm worth it or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'm helping them realize you have a frame that your price point is expensive.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And how are you going to, you know, it's a ton, if it's a lot of money for you and it feels like a lot of money, no matter how you pitch it to somebody, it's odd, right, that people will pick up your unconscious frames.
That's right.
And they all respond by going, well, it's a lot of money and I just can't do it right now.
Okay. So this is...
So I talk to them and say, change the frame.
Right. So this is communication. So this person that you're talking about is communicating to themselves, this is a lot of money.
Right.
That has to get communicated out to the other person.
Right.
So your internal communication, the way you're talking to yourself, is going to affect the way that you communicate to the other person. Right. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about reframes then.
Okay.
So we talked about frames, and I think we could go on and on with examples, but you get the idea that frames are unconscious usually, and they're frames that we give for ourselves and for other people.
Right.
So let's talk about reframing. Reframing is an art. Reframing is literally changing the frame for someone else.
Yes.
So like in NLP trainings, our NLP mastery course, we'll talk about context reframes and meaning reframes.
Right.
So what are some classic ways you can do either one, I guess, or, you know, explain what the difference is or anything at all? I'm picking your brain right now.
Yeah. So. Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So a reframe is taking a particular frame that somebody has. It could be you, it could be somebody else. And saying, what is another perspective that you could look at this from that would change the meaning of it?
Wow.
That would change the meaning in a useful way.
Mm-hmm.
Change the meaning so that, hey, you know what? It's not so expensive. It's worth it.
Right.
Or change the meaning so that the rain is a good thing. Or, you know, or whatever is useful to give it a new meaning.
Right. Okay.
So reframing. So you're right. A context reframe is, in what context could this be useful?
Right.
Right? And so, like, you know, we talked, so rain, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? So we talked about how if you're going out to the beach and you're planning a party on the beach, it could be a bad thing.
Sure.
Unless you decide to dance in the rain, right?
Right.
or a different context is if there's a drought. These are two different contexts. And they give it two different meanings, right?
All right. So let's use something close to home. So say you have an accent. right? You're from Houston, Texas, right? So you have an accent on stage, and somebody says, man, how do you teach? You have an accent. Like, that's got to be hard to, because I have an accent. I'm from China, and no one understands me, and you're hard to understand because you have your Southern draw, obviously, you know? So, so that's a frame, obviously, right?
Right.
There's a frame around that. So how do you reframe that? Do you reframe the meaning of it? Do you reframe the context of it?
Yeah. Okay. So I could what immediately comes to my mind is a change in the meaning that like
So what do we think it means? Okay. Right now you have an accent and I just said that to you. So
okay.
So there's a current frame around meaning.
Right. So the frame there is accent equals hard to understand.
Gotcha.
Right?
So the frame is, what does the accent mean? The meaning of the accent is hard to understand. So we want to change what it means to have an accent.
Right.
So what would you do?
Okay. So, you know, my brother, what he says is that having a Southern accent gives him an advantage, because a lot of people take that Southern accent to mean that he's not too smart. And then so he says, that's an advantage, because then people underestimate me.
Wow. And all of a sudden, it becomes an advantage, not a liability.
Right. Whereas, you know, a lot of people could look at that and say, if people don't think I'm smart, that's a disadvantage. To him, he has a different meaning to it, right?
Well, instantly he said, no. That was his frame, right? Someone else might say, oh, if someone thinks you're not smart, oh, that's a disadvantage. It's not a disadvantage. It means they underestimate me, which means anything I do is going to be above par.
Right. Exactly.
That's so good.
Exactly.
Nice.
Yeah.
A few come to mind, too, as we like when we teach in classes, right, or teach meaning reframes.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, I yell at you. You know, or you know, he yells all the time, and that means he doesn't love me.
Right.
Right. And we'll say something like, well, like sometimes, and truly it's true. Sometimes it's the fact that I yell doesn't mean I don't love you. It means I do love you. Because in my house growing up, when we really cared, we stuck it out.
Yeah.
And we would yell, but we would get through it.
Yes.
Where in another family, right, they would leave and they would walk out the door and not talk to each other.
Yeah.
So here's, an interesting point, too, and I'm curious on your comments on it. A lot of people get caught up in reframing because it starts to feel like justification.
Mm-hmm.
Like in that last example, right? Someone says, like, the question of, is it okay for my husband or my wife to yell at me? Well, it's number one is you can reframe it. That's one thing, right? To say, well, maybe the yelling doesn't mean they don't love you. Maybe it actually means they do love you and they're willing to be passionate in a conversation, right?
Yeah.
So that can be a healthy thing to reframe the meaning, but don't misunderstand reframing a meaning with boundaries and allowing with hurtful behavior potentially, because it might not be appropriate, right? Like I wouldn't use that with, oh, he hits me or she hits me, right? That wouldn't make any sense. Well, I hit you because I love you. Obviously, that's terrible and that's a boundary, right? Mm-hmm. That's something that's just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. I hate that expression. So especially after I had a baby, it's pretty hard to miss because the baby's so little and the bathtubs are so little.
Well, and what I would say too in that example that you gave, where you said. And this, I think that's a classic and common example.
Sure.
Where say there's a couple, one yells, and to them, like you said, growing up in my family, yelling means that we're passionate and we're honest. We're not holding back. We're showing what we really feel.
Yeah.
And the other grew up in a family, and the way they interpret it is yelling means you don't respect me.
Right.
If we respect each other, then we resolve our differences amicably.
Right.
And that means we don't raise our voices.
Well, and that's what my wife and I walked through early on in our marriage was – she grew up in a family that they would slam doors and they would tell each other exactly how they felt very passionately.
Mm.
And then I grew up in a family where most of my mom didn't do that, but my dad did. Mm. And so I learned, hey, I don't like that. That's like, because he just kind of bulldozed through it, right?
Right.
And he's changed a lot now, but that was how he grew up.
Right.
So I was in a place where I'm like, hey, if you raise your voice, I'm just going to leave until we're going to be back to normal. I love you enough that I'm not going to yell and fight.
Yeah.
She was it with the unconscious frame, right? Of I love you enough that I'm willing to stick this out and to yell or to what she wouldn't yell, but you know, to get really passionate, to raise her voice, to like, you know, to just be right there until we figure it out. And literally it was exactly opposite for us, right? Because she loved doing that because that was how she resolves things.
Yeah.
I hated it because that's my fear. So I would resolve it opposite, rational.
Right. So you're like, I became an adult to get away from that.
Right?
Right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So we're sitting in this place where it's like both of us carried a frame of what it means to yell.
Yes.
she or you know raise our voice, right? Yeah. She doesn't even yelling had to be reframed. But like, but her frame was that means I care and I love you and I'm sticking around. And my frame was because she had someone in her life who didn't care enough to yell and left.
Yeah,
I had someone in my life who didn't care enough and they stayed and yelled.
Yeah,
right.
And that's a meaning, right?
Absolutely.
That's a frame that. Not yelling then means you don't care enough, you might leave.
That's right.
That's a deal.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And that was what she would always say. Again, this is really early on, years ago.
Yeah.
She'd always say things like, I feel like you left me. Like, you know, where did you, even if I'm in the room, I'm like, look, I'm not doing this.
Whoa.
So she'd be like, oh, yeah. I feel like you're, like, why do you always leave? You leave emotionally. I'm like, but for me, I'm like, I don't leave emotionally. I genuinely feel like I'm going, hey, let's back off. I'm not going to get into this heated debate.
Yeah.
So talk about two very different frames
that
if we didn't know what they were, and we didn't at first.
Yes.
But we had to figure out what the frames were so we could then reframe them.
Yes. Yes. Well, and in that example that you gave of that somebody is yelling and then they say, well, that, you know, the meaning of it is not that you don't care. The meaning for this person may be just that they're passionate about it. And you gave the example to say, for a lot of people, that is justification.
Yep.
If somebody is feeling like that's justification, then I would say that person really hasn't had a true reframe.
Mm. So going back to my point about not allowing someone to take on a reframe, like, oh, they yell or, you know, whatever, because now it's just justifying that the behavior is okay when the behavior should actually change.
Yeah. So
they haven't had a real reframe.
They haven't had a real reframe. They're still seeing it from the same frame of yelling equals, you know, disrespect or something like that, right?
Yep.
And then you say, no, it's really showing passion. And then that person may say, okay, I'm going to try to be patient here, but you're just playing with semantics.
You're just playing with semantics.
Right? Yeah. That person really hasn't been truly reframed.
That makes sense.
They're still seeing it from the same frame.
Right.
It's just different words, and you're trying to manipulate me.
Yeah. Now, would you say there's also times that a situation deserves a good reframe so we can change the way we feel and think about a situation?
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, some situations also need behavior modification.
Of course.
Right? So maybe
again,
and
the reframe can help with that.
Right. Because somebody, like a spouse, could be yelling in a disrespectful way.
Right.
And you could reframe and say, well, I know that the reason they're yelling is because they love me enough.
Yes.
But they're also going about it in an unhealthy way.
Okay.
So does that make sense? So like you can still, I want everyone to get, you can still reframe something and feel better and think differently about it and still allow to say, hey, now that I understand that you're yelling because you love me and I get it. Now let's talk about the fact that I'm not okay with it, right? Like, does that make sense? Like, can you still
Completely.
Do that, right?
Of course.
So just so everyone understands that, this is probably the hottest topic on reframing, that people have gone through stuff or have had negative things. They just kind of start jumping to, wait a minute, now you're just going to reframe every negative behavior as a positive one. Well, not necessarily. There is a positive intention behind every behavior.
Yeah.
Right? Even a negative one.
Yeah.
But that never makes the negative behaviors okay.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
I think, but some people just kind of, they hear that and they assume, oh, well, if we're going to reframe a negative behavior saying, well, there was a positive reason they did it, now you're making the behavior okay. And that's not absolutely not true.
Definitely not true.
Yeah,
not true. And so, well, like I was teaching a class one time and somebody said, I can't remember if we were talking about reframe or not, but somebody said, so wait a minute though, this isn't right. Because if somebody is abusive to me, then I'm not just going to say that that's okay.
Right.
That's
exactly the point, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And of course this is not trying to say that abuse is okay.
Right.
What the question that I came back with was,
this is going to be good.
is what is the difference between boundaries and being triggered?
Hmm.
And is it possible? Because you know, I think really this person had a frame where they felt that they had been abused, and so their subconscious mind set up rules to say, here's what is not acceptable for me,
right.
and I'm going to be you know, really on the defensive about this,
yeah.
right?
Yep.
Which was, and that's a positive thing within that context to say that I'm not putting up with this behavior, right?
Yeah.
So that's very positive. So the question is then, though, how well is that serving them overall?
Mm-hmm.
It's serving them to the extent that it's preventing them from accepting being abused, which is awesome, right?
Which that is a good thing.
And that is a very good thing.
Yeah.
The question then is how at choice are they, how together are they in terms of their reactions to things? Because it can absolutely be, I said, is it possible that somebody, that you could say, here's my boundaries. I said, what is your definition of boundaries? You know, what does that mean, right? And to me, boundaries are exactly like the boundaries of a country, right? The borders of a country. It's what you say, here's what we're going to accept into the country that is healthy and nourishing to this country, and here's what we're going to let out of this country that we want to, you know, get out of this country, right?
That's really good.
And it's exactly the same thing with a human being.
Now, hang on.
Yeah, okay, good.
Let me stop you for a second because that's really interesting, and I think we could actually do a whole podcast on boundaries.
Okay.
No, I mean it.
I'm sure.
Yeah, let's do that, in fact.
Okay.
Why don't you come back and let's do a whole podcast on boundaries and healthy communication. I think that could be really cool because that fits in the workplace. It fits in relationships.
Sure.
Everywhere in our lives,
we
should always have sets of boundaries.
Right? Yeah.
All right, so let's remember that.
Okay.
Okay, last thing I want to make sure we kind of have time to talk about.
Okay.
Hopefully that made sense. We're talking about frames, communication with ourselves, communication with others. We're talking about reframing meanings, reframing contexts that – one behavior in one context isn't okay, but in another context it is, right? So the classic example I was given the NLP trainings is the young girl that came to Milton Erickson with her father who said she was too stubborn, right? Mm-hmm. And I just love that because he's like, fix her, she's too stubborn. She won't listen to her father. She won't listen to her mother. She does whatever she wants whenever she wants it. And Milton looked at the little girl and she smiled and he looked back at the father and said, and won't that stubbornness serve her well when she starts to date?
Right.
And instantly the father gets this total reframe.
Right.
But it's such a good example of a behavior called stubbornness.
Right.
That in one context, as a 6-year-old girl listening to her parents, probably it's not great to have a high stubbornness in that context, right? We want the little girl to, you know, listen and to have good discipline and so forth.
Yeah, certainly not for the father.
Right, exactly, right? Well, and even for the little girl, to be fair, too, right? I mean,
probably.
Like 6-year-old, like if I told my son 6 and a half right now, very important that it's half. Six and a half.
Right.
But if I said, Val, you choose whatever you want to have for every meal, he'd have nothing but Skittles. And so what does a 6-year-old know, right? Like if I let him be as stubborn as he wanted to, it actually wouldn't end up being good for him.
Right.
Because he's not at the place to make choices.
At his level of maturity, sure. Absolutely.
At the same time, so stubbornness wasn't good for the 6-year-old context.
Mm-hmm.
But you flip forward to 16 and she goes on her date.
Right.
And now all of a sudden the dad goes, wait a minute, I want her stubborn. I don't want her to do whatever some boy says.
That's right.
Right?
Right.
So reframing has the power to take a behavior and take the attention off of the behavior and put it onto the frame, which is really what makes a behavior good or bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about, is aggression good or bad? Well, it depends. Are you playing rugby or are you in a relationship,
right? Yeah.
One context, it's expected and you get rewarded.
Right.
You make money.
That's right.
In another context, you go to jail,
right?
Like totally different things.
Right.
But what's cool is we can take our attention off of individual behaviors and stop judging and going, well, all aggression is bad. All stubbornness is bad.
Right.
All silence is bad.
Right.
Well, it depends, right?
Right.
So I love that. Any comments? We've talked forever on reframing. I know I just chucked in the context right there, but you got anything on that?
Anything
else on context reframing?
On context reframing.
You don't have to, but if you have something, we're good.
Not particularly about context reframe.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. So let's jump to preframes.
Okay.
And let's kind of wrap up with preframes. This is – the time is a little bit off. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
So what we were talking about preframing. So reframing is shifting the existing frame.
That's right.
So we already communicated something.
Yep.
And now we need to change the frame it was communicated in, whether we were aware or not. So how does preframing differ from reframing?
Yeah.
Mike Bagala.
Okay. So preframing is saying, is taking advantage of the fact that human beings do create frames that informs what the meaning of anything is going to be, right?
And we know, so
Yeah.
We're always going to create a frame.
We're always going to create a frame. There's always a frame.
There always is, no matter, even if you don't try to make one, there's going to be one, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and even the frame of, I can step outside of my frames and view the way that I'm looking
can
at things.
Can you stop being so meta-framing right now?
That's a frame, right?
Right, yeah. And the frame of me looking at your framing, meta-framing about pre-frames is a frame, too.
It is, absolutely.
Right.
So
everything's a frame.
There's always a frame.
There's not never not a frame.
Right. Reframing is taking a frame that you don't think is particularly useful and shifting the perspective so it gives it a new meaning.
Solid.
Okay. Pre-framing is saying, before a frame is formed, what kind of frame do we want to create? What kind? How do we want people to view this? And let's create that up front so that we don't even have to reframe it.
So you can pre-framing is setting a frame intentionally?
Intentionally from the start.
Okay. What if you don't do it intentionally? Is it still pre-framing, would you say?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you can still pre-frame accidentally.
Yes.
But
in fact, we always talk about, do that.
Right.
Yeah.
So like you said, everything is framed, which means Everything is pre-framed.
Right.
But we want to talk about kind of ways and fun quirks of how you can consciously and intentionally pre-frame to help. Okay.
Yeah.
So what's an example of like how you would pre-frame on purpose?
Okay. So in what I want to emphasize about this is that there's a lot of NLP training, including ours, that talks a lot about reframing.
Especially ours.
And reframing is so valuable and so awesome.
Yeah.
But what's more influential is actually preframing.
Really?
And that doesn't get the attention that it deserves.
Mm.
I mean, like, you and I...
Let's make sure we teach that coming up in the next class.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's make a pact. We're going to do a reframing section.
Okay, great.
Right?
Okay, cool.
In November 2017. If you're listening to this after November, I apologize.
I'm totally for it, yeah.
But the November NLP Mastery, let's do a pre-framing section.
Great.
And a reframing section.
Great,
yeah.
Great. Because, you know, think about this. So the two of us, Matt, when we're, like, talking about our seminars before, after, during, whatever, which do we talk about more? Do we talk about, let's reframe this situation, or how do we pre-frame this? What do you think we talk about more?
I mean, yeah, I think we do talk about pre-framing more.
A lot more, I would say.
And in fact, every time we talk about
it,
we're always pre-framing.
Yeah.
Like when we talk about how effective the seminars are, or we talk about how much fun and how much transformation occurs.
Yes.
All of those things pre-frame. So by the time somebody actually shows up live, they've had 800 pre-frames about what to expect.
Yep.
But here's my question for you is, why does that matter? So if I get pre-framed to what to expect... Like, because here's what I start thinking of, right, is my skeptical brain. Somebody goes, oh, you're going to love this movie, and they pre-frame it.
Yeah.
And then I show up and go, no, I don't. This movie stinks.
Yeah.
Can pre-framing make a bad movie good? Or, like, does that make sense? Like, what's the purpose of it?
Well, and, you know, that could actually work the opposite way. If you go in expecting
it's
a movie
gonna
be
so
great,
good.
And then it's pretty good, by contrast, you're going to feel like it was lousy.
Right.
Right?
So, did you see Guardians of the Galaxy 2 yet?
Yeah, I saw that with you.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, of course we did. Yeah. Sorry. I saw it like three times.
Yeah.
But did you like it?
Yeah, I didn't like it as much as you did. I did like it.
Yeah. So I'm just curious because it's kind of a funny, like, I guess, inside joke, but now it's outside for everybody. So ever since Guardians of the Galaxy 2 came out, I saw it and I loved it. I thought it was the best movie I'd seen in 10 years probably. It was great.
Yeah.
I laughed. I cried. I enjoyed it. I smiled all throughout.
I
it was
the
awesome.
Soundtrack. Yeah.
Yeah, soundtrack is awesome. Yeah. My kid loves the soundtrack.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Yeah.
So we're listening to, like, you know, Fox on the Run, all these 70 songs. It's great.
It's going through my head, yeah.
Yeah, right? Yeah. The Chain, Fleetwood Mac, man.
Yeah.
That's one of his favorite songs now.
Oh,
The
that's
Chain,
awesome.
Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
And he wasn't even born anywhere near that time.
Right.
It's just so good.
He knows the classics.
So I've been pre-framing that movie as the best in the last decade.
Yeah.
So phenomenal. So that's interesting, though. So if the movie was bad... My preframe isn't going to make it good, right?
Right.
But at the same time, I could overly preframe something, and then you could actually have the reverse experience because you go, oh, this is going to be
Absolutely.
So good, and then I don't meet expectations.
Absolutely.
And now you go, oh, well, it was okay.
Well, and then also, talking about preframing, also what's really important here is what is the frame of your relationship? If the frame is dad is cool, Then you talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. It's the greatest movie, Val. You're going to love it. Oh, I can't wait to see it.
Wow.
It's going to be great. If Dad is, you know, maybe 17, when he's 17, and like, oh, you got to go see Guardians of the Galaxy.
And Dad's a dork. He's like, I don't think so. That must be the worst movie ever.
Right. And even if he likes it, he's going to be like, I can't really admit this is a good movie. Right? Because the frame.
So the pre-frame isn't just what we say, like, oh, this is a great movie.
Sure.
The pre-frame is also the context and the container it comes in.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
a really good point.
Yeah.
All right, let's back up a second and actually talk about just pre-framing in general, because this is already getting really cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, before we talk about the exceptions and how it can shift, let's just talk about how to use it in the first place.
Okay, so like, an example. Recent example, I was talking to somebody who, you know, sees clients and does, you know, change work with them.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how they had a box of Kleenexes there.
Yeah.
Okay. As simple as that is.
That's a preframe.
That's a preframe. So if I'm a client and I
Here's
walk
Here's the Kleenex. You'll need them.
Yeah.
Slide it across the table.
I walk into the office and I see the Kleenexes. Maybe it's not even going to register consciously.
Sure.
But what I'm being told as a preframe is this is going to be heavy emotional stuff.
Yep, and people cry when they're here.
And people cry when we're here. And so I'm going to be more likely to cry because you put those Kleenexes out.
Wow.
So.
But I liked how you said I'll be more likely to cry.
Yeah.
Because preframes also aren't magic.
Oh, that's
It's not like, oh, if I put Kleenex here, that'll make you cry.
No.
It's if I put Kleenex in a room and there's 100 people that came through for a session.
Yes.
I'll bet you any money more people would cry in the Kleenex rooms than in the non-Kleenex rooms. It's that sort of a thing, right?
But
you're more likely to get your results.
Yes.
But nothing is guaranteed because there are so many factors.
Yes.
Like, did a cool dad say it or a nerdy dad?
Right.
Right, and so
exactly.
forth. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Good. So then, how do you use this? So like,
how do you use this?
How do you use this? How do you use pre-framing? So I think the process is this. So here's a challenge.
There's a process. All right.
You're listening to this. Yeah, turn this into a process. Why not use it, right?
Why not?
So so this is taking the frame of let's make this useful.
Yeah, sure.
So if you're listening to this, and how is this useful? Because what you're doing is you're shifting people's perception of reality in advance.
Right.
So how do you use that? What you would do is you would say, how do I want people to perceive this? How might they perceive it in a negative way? And then how can I head that off at the pass so that the way that I set things up means that people are just naturally going to take it as the meaning that I want them to have it as. So,
step is ask or decide up front, how do I want people to take
this? How do I want people to see this?
So if I'm selling a TV, right, the first thing I want to think of is I don't want someone to think this is expensive. My first thought is I want them, well, I guess my first thought might be what I don't want them to see it as, right? Mm-hmm. But then really the first step is how do I want them to perceive it? I want them to perceive that this is amazing quality for a really good value, right? I want them to perceive that from what you just said. So, but I'm worried that they're going to perceive it as really expensive and a waste of money.
Okay.
So what am I going to pre-frame or what's the process for that?
Okay. So, I mean, a thought that came to my mind may not be the best, but it's like along the lines of what you should be thinking is – then what you could do is put really expensive TVs up front,
right?
So that by the time they get back to the TVs that you really want to sell them, there's already that contrast frame.
Right. So you actually, so you can set the frame with the environment.
Yeah.
So you have $5,000 TV here that's pretty good, and you have a $4,000 TV here, and then you get to the back and there's a $3,500 TV.
Yeah.
But it's also 4K and it's also these extra things.
Yeah.
And now you're like, hey, I want you to know, like, this TV is tremendous quality. It's actually one of the highest quality ones we have. And look at the value for what you get compared to these other ones.
Yes.
So now I go, wow, that's actually, that could be $5,000. It's only $3,500.
Yeah.
I'm thinking because my TV was $3,500.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's terrible. Which was so funny because that's exactly what happened. Because when we first went in, it was my third TV. So when I first went in for it, I'm looking for a TV that's going to fit the wall for the new house moved into. And I didn't start off with that big of a TV and that expensive, right? I tried to get a really good price and get as big as I could for the cheapest I could.
Yeah.
And I ended up with a subpar TV, right? Okay. It was like, wow, this is not actually that great.
Right.
It wasn't good picture and all those things. So I had this in my mind where if I spent $1,500 on this big TV, it was going to be really crappy quality. Okay. And then, but I looked at the big special ones. Ah, it's too expensive. But I started working my way into it, kind of consistently reframing.
Yeah.
So by the time I saw this, I go, well, you know what? That gives me the quality of these $5,000 TVs, but and it's the other one I had was only 2,800, so it's only a few hundred more.
Right.
And I started right.
Right. Whereas if that had been the first TV that you looked at, it'd been like 3,500.
Yeah, that was outside the budget of anything I expected to pay.
Sure. Sure.
So in hindsight, let's just say I'm the salesperson there now.
Yeah.
I love your idea. So you could actually put. Because I taught people in real estate to do that too, and I used to do that when I was an agent, you know, back in the day. Is you find the perfect house and you know it's a good price, it's under market, or it's even at market, but it's everything they want. It's quality is above market, so it's really good either way. It's good value, but if you show them that by itself, there's no preframe.
Yeah.
So sometimes the preframe isn't, oh, you'll love this house, it's really nice.
Right.
Sometimes the preframe is environmental. I think that's huge.
For sure.
So I set up a tour where I'm going to show you one of the houses that's totally in the market, but it's really expensive and it's also nice. And then I'll show you, so it's more expensive, but equally nice. And then I'll show you another house that's the same price, but way poorer quality. And then I show you the third house and say, now I think you'll find this one to be such a good value. And they go and they see a high quality and they see the price lower than the, right?
Yeah.
And so now the pre-frame is something that has good quality and good value is smack in the middle.
Yep.
And they go, oh my gosh, can we get it? Please, please, please. Where if you showed it by itself with no preframe, no environmental preframe, no contrast frame, it would just be a house by itself. And I guess it's almost like with nothing to contrast to, nothing to compare to, there's no reference points for whether it's good or not.
Absolutely. So say you are selling houses, then what is going to be most useful for you and for them?
Mm-hmm.
To see the purchase of this house from what perspective?
Okay.
It could be just, you know what, I want the best value. And that's a certain frame.
Yeah.
But what if you were to talk to them about, you know, what's really most important to you?
Yeah.
Maybe get their values of what's most important to them. And then you put buying this house in terms of the context of raising a family.
Yep.
Right? And if that's the frame, I want to have the best home for my family.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very different frame from, okay, you know what? I'm buying a house. I want to get the absolute best value that I can. And
Do I want the best price or do I want the best family home or do I want the best location?
Right.
That makes sense.
Those are different frames.
Okay. So you decide what you want and then you think about what they might already go in with. Is that kind of how you said it?
Sure. That can be a very good thing.
Yeah.
Right?
And then so what do we do to start pre-framing? Because we've already talked about all the ways that pre-framing is more than just words, but what if you were just using words? Like, I mean, can it be that simple sometimes?
It can be,
And so how would that work out?
Okay. So one thing I am a really big believer in is this, is if you know that people have, or they'll likely will have, some kind of a negative belief or frame or something like that, then speak what it is that they're already thinking or they're going to think. And when you do it first, you're gonna gain rapport and you're gonna cut off the power of that, you know, secret thought they're having. So let's be specific here. It's not just abstract.
Yeah.
So if you're starting up a business and you say, man, you know, I'm starting up this business, but everybody's gonna think I'm too young or I'm too old or I'm not qualified or whatever it is.
Let's go with too young.
Let's just say too young. Okay, so the first thing I would say is this, is most importantly, is that really true? Is that based on real world feedback? Or is it based on your fears?
Wow.
If it's based on your fears, then...
So some people have a baby face and everywhere you go, everyone thinks you're 5 years old, right?
Right.
But some people might just, in their mind, they have this fear of like, well, I'm so young, who's going to believe me? But the reality is nobody's actually looking at you going, you're so young.
Yeah.
They're just looking at you.
It may just be... you know, some irrational fear that you have. And if that's the case, then deal with that.
Right.
And then you're not going to communicate, hey, I'm too young, and have people think that.
You don't have to worry about
it.
All right.
But if you've done that, and you've had 15 sales calls, and 10 of those people say, how old are you? How long have you been doing this? You know, then you're getting feedback that's based on the real world, right?
Sure.
And it may not be based on your own internal stuff. Okay. So then what you do, in a case like that, if people have some kind of skepticism, you pre-frame it. You say it before they can.
Okay.
So what you would say is, hey, look, I know you're probably thinking here, what can this kid possibly know about selling a house? right? You might have faced some of that, right? You sold a lot of houses young.
I started at 18,
right?
I was sitting across the desk with people talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars of their mortgage and their life savings, and I'm 18, right?
And so say that and even exaggerate. Like, what does this pimply-faced kid know? What could he possibly know about real estate, right?
Right.
And you know what? Those are good questions. I don't blame you for asking that, but you're asking the same thing.
Yeah.
And here's and then get into it. Like, so then and here's what I've got. Because it's not only me, it's the people that I've been backed up with. And I've learned from the best, and I've learned this, and I've gotten this system, and here's what I may not have 20 years of experience, but I tell you what I do have is I've got heart, because I am absolutely committed to, because I'm not the most experienced, but I decided that I am going to be the hardest working.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, that's really good. Right?
So is that, would that end up being more, I'm doing a what if right now, would that be more of a reframe of an existing unconscious preframe? Technically, maybe?
Maybe.
But at the same time, you're also, you're preframing, because right up front, before anyone says anything, you're bringing a frame of youth doesn't equal inexperience.
Yes.
Or youth doesn't equal low quality. I'm going to bring you this great preframe. Yes. I like that a lot.
Yes. And if, and if you bring it up before they do, it's going to be more powerful. And even if it's kind of a preframe that they have, but then maybe they haven't consciously thought of it.
Sure.
Then what you're doing is you're saying, hey, here's what really what this means. Right?
So back to the TVs then. You could probably do, like, let's just say the expensive preframe.
Yeah.
So one way to handle it is make a contrast where you put other more expensive TVs up front, right? But you could also handle that same way by doing just what you said. Now, listen, I know this looks like it's more cost than most other TVs.
Yeah.
And you'd be right to think that. I totally get that.
Yeah.
I want to put it in perspective, though, because the average TV, maybe, you know, these ones down here, they're going to last for 5 to 6 years, and then a tube or something's going to go or whatever. These are known to last 15 plus years, which is an average of 3 times the amount, right?
Great.
So you're not going to be replacing the TV.
Yes.
Plus it comes with this and this. So,
really it's cheaper.
When you add these things up, it actually ends up being super cheap compared, right?
Yeah.
So you're not as much, I mean, I said compared, but it's not really a comparison as much as you think it's expensive, but let me explain to you why this is actually a good price for what you're getting.
Right.
And you do that up front as a preframe.
Right.
Otherwise, you're telling them all about how great, this is what most salespeople do. They tell them all about how great the TV is, and they're trying to sell an expensive TV. And the whole time, the people in their minds are like, this is a really expensive TV. And the salesperson's like, yeah, it's expensive TV, big commission. And right, but they're having this conversation around the expensive TV.
Yeah.
Never dealing with the elephant in the room, which is the frame of $3,500 is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So in your example with the pimply-faced kid or whatever, you're pre-framing in the beginning how simple that is. Now,
And what you do also is you're gaining rapport, because the person's saying, yeah, right, we're on the same wavelength now.
Yeah, you're right. Because if I say, look, I get it, it is an expensive TV, they don't have to now convince me.
Yeah.
Right? They don't have to argue for the point that I agree with.
Yeah, right, exactly. Sense. Yeah.
Let's leave with this one too. What about like the simplest, easiest preframes?
Okay.
So the example of like, let's just say like how I introduce you to people, right?
Okay.
I'm like, oh my gosh. Like when you're not around, I tell people, dude, you got to meet Mike. He is like the sweetest, most genuine guy.
Awesome.
And I always give a preframe of, I thought you were fake because you were so nice.
Right.
And because I was like, he's so nice. And I thought, well, nobody's that nice.
Yeah.
And over the years, I realized he's actually just that nice, and he's unlike most other people. So you were going to love him.
Well, thank you, Matt.
You're
that
welcome.
Is absolutely preframe. Yes.
Well, it's true, right?
Yeah.
But if I just said, oh my gosh, I can't wait for you to meet Mike. He's so genuine. You're going to love him, right?
Yeah.
Versus if I said, okay, listen, you got to meet my partner, Mike. He's a little out there, but just kind of go along for the ride and you won't get hurt.
Then I'm going to be on edge. Like, what is he talking about?
Right.
Yeah.
But then I guess my question is, so, because you can over preframe, under preframe, whatever, but when I do that, one or the other, and then Mike walks in the door an hour later, the person is more likely to have an experience of you. Would you say they're more likely to have an experience of you based on the preframe I gave them?
Yes.
Or, okay.
Yeah. So.
But back to your point about like the cool dad or the lame dad, if I say, okay, you're going to meet my friend Jim, and he's a really cool dude, and my teenage son's going to be like, oh, God, two of you.
Yes, right, exactly.
He's going to look for reasons to be a dork.
Right, exactly, because that's what he's been pre-framed for.
If my dad thinks it's cool, it's lame.
Yeah, exactly. So, and here's what you're doing, which in that example where you talked about introducing me, you're telling people what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And when it happens, what that means.
Yeah.
So that's a frame for it. So in other words, when somebody meets me,
what's going to happen, and then when it happens, what that means. That's good.
So then when somebody meets me and they say, and they might have a thought, is this guy for real?
Yeah.
Then they're going to think, oh, that's just what Matt said. So he's absolutely right.
Right.
He is, you know.
Yeah.
He is like that. He is that nice.
Awesome.
Right.
Well, so, Mike, I got to say, you are that genuine.
And thank you.
Thank you for coming out today. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Thanks thanks for being so willing just to also just pop in spontaneously and say, let's put this together. So
definitely.
Let
it's
us
been
know.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. Let us know what you think about Mike. Give us some feedback, rates, reviews. Tweet me, all that stuff. Mike, thanks for coming on, man. Sure appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Matt.
All right.
Been fun.
Hey, my thanks to Mike Bagala. Man, what a great guy, right?
Definitely.
I love that interview with him. I think when you talk to Mike, so many gems come out. It's like talking to a mad scientist. You can't sit with Mike for more than 10 minutes and not go, oh my gosh, I didn't know that. And I want to find out more about it. So we will be having Mike back on. I promise you that. Gosh, and he's got such great stories too, right? So. Really, really good stories. He's sharing just metaphors, how he teaches. That's how he teaches live too at our trainings. So we're super blessed to have Mike. Cannot wait to have him back on. So thanks, Mike. I want to ask you too, as you think about frames and everything that Mike and I talked about in the podcast, my question is, where can you apply this? You know, like, do you see this at play in the world right now? Do you see when you're going out, is it in your marriage? Is it, you know, are you framing bedtime to your kids? Like, where can you use it right now? Because one of the principles that we live by with purpose-driven entrepreneurs is that if you're out there doing this stuff, you should be living this stuff. And everything that we share in one of these episodes, we should be able to apply to our life today and use today. So take a look around and figure out where you're going to do that. Jeremy, what else do we have today? What else is going on?
Definitely like us. On any platform that you can find a podcast, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, any of the above, definitely like, subscribe, rate, review. Ask some questions. Definitely ask them some questions because they may be the topic of the next podcast that we do, and we definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, so make sure you connect with us. You can find me on social media at Matt Browning. That's Browning. Or you can find the company at Evolution Seminars. I'm sure as we get more episodes in the can, we will. I'm sure we'll end up with a podcast website or something. We'll see where all that goes. But for now, just find me on social media at Matt Browning. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and hit me up, man. Ask questions. Any questions you have, anything you'd like us to talk about at one point, if it's a big enough topic, we'll make an episode off of it. If it's a smaller question, we're doing every Monday. We're having Mondays with Matt. So we're starting that live now, and we're going on Facebook Live, and we'll be taking those archives and dropping them into the podcast as well. So be on the lookout for all that stuff. Having a lot of fun, and I hope to see you soon. See you soon.